Welcome back to Being Bookish. I've been reading a lot of different genres over the last few weeks, everything from mysteries to urban fantasy. And after receiving a series of subscription boxes, including a brand new offering from Illumicrate, the book for this week felt like a pretty obvious choice. This week's review is of a book that was released at the beginning of April, so only a couple of weeks ago as I'm recording. The book was well promoted, marketing was incredibly clever, including exclusive proofs in stunning gold foiling, which appeared back in June 2025, while the author's identity itself remained a secret for six more months from the initial announcement of an incredible murder mystery in April 2025 until September of the same year. As much as I love beautiful proofs and mystery novels, and I really do, you must have seen some of my photos on Instagram, and I have talked about quite a few mysteries in the last few years, the hype was something that initially put me off. I have been burned by identity secrets when it comes to authors before. Just check out my review of Argyle from the beginning of 2024, and I actually had to look that up. I couldn't believe it was that long ago. I thought it was last year. In this review, I'm stuck on an isolated Scottish island living in a castle with a murderer in Evelyn Clarke's 2026 murder mystery debut, The Ending Writes Itself. I'm Ray, an unapologetic bookworm, introvert, self-confessed hermit, and long-time depression sufferer. This is my quiet space to share thoughts as I make my way through an incredibly large to-be-read pile. Join me as I explore the stories on my bookshelf, one book at a time, with 100% honest and completely spoiler-free reviews. Please step into my bookish world and enjoy your stay. Secrets don't stay secret for long in publishing. Six authors, one private island, 72 hours to write the ending that will change their lives. This is a house of novelists, not murderers. You dream up crimes, you don't commit them. But a writer has, and so who better than a writer to catch them? World-famous author Arthur Fletch is dead. His final novel, the most anticipated book in history, remains unfinished, but the ending won't write itself. Fletch's publisher, Merriweather Press, has invited six authors to Fletch's private island in Scotland, authors whose books have never had the big marketing budgets or publicity opportunities. In other words, mid-list. And they're about to be presented with the opportunity of a lifetime. Whoever writes a worthy ending will receive $1 million and a further $1 million for a new three-book contract. They have just 72 hours with no access to the outside world, just a typewriter and a blank page. All they have to do is write. Starting is often the hardest part, but getting to the end could be murder. As with every single book I review, I am going to keep the detailed discussion and my personal opinion about the plot, characters, experiences, and some of the underlying themes to my review section at the end. And I am still going to maintain the whole honest and spoiler-free plan because I really don't want to ruin everything for you, whatever my feelings about the book and the story happen to be. Take six authors who aren't exactly the successes they hoped they would be when they started writing and invite them to an isolated island off the Scottish coast. Then tell them they have 72 hours to write an ending for an unfinished novel by a successful, but unfortunately now deceased, author. Best-selling author Arthur Fletch is dead. He drowned while on his morning swim, leaving the final novel in his popular mystery series, Plutarch, without an ending. His publishers are understandably panicking, so they come up with an idea to invite six authors to write an ending. The best ending will win the author a 3-book publishing deal and more success than any of them have experienced in their careers up to this point. Sienna and Malcolm write together as thriller author Penn Stoneley. Not long before they were invited to the island, Sienna presented her husband with divorce papers, having grown tired of doing all the work while her lazy and entitled husband soaks up all the glory, making him the face behind their name, because male authors sell better, apparently, was the biggest mistake, and she regrets it. But this opportunity, given their falling sales, is something they couldn't pass up. So she'll work with him one last time, resentfully. As they're travelling to the island, Malcolm swears he sees the deceased Arthur Fletch waving at them. But that can't be, because he's dead. Priscilla Renee Fox is a romance author. So what's she doing on the island, having been asked to write the ending to a mystery? She's had some small success, but as she states quite clearly, romance is the backbone of the publishing industry, and you need talent to write in such an overpopulated genre and stand out. The moment he meets her, Malcolm is smarmy and slick, as though he hopes to impress her. He doesn't. Millie Mitchell writes YA novels, and out of all of them, despite being in her 30s, she acts very young and is incredibly excited to be part of the challenge. She's bouncy, fun, and can see the possibilities in front of her. There's something of a spark between her and Jackson, another author, but to act on it would be a huge distraction she doesn't need. She's determined and the first one to start work on her chapters when the timer buzzes. Jackson Knight is smooth, muscle-bound and concerned for his health in a way that feels somewhat judgmental. He's the one who tells everybody else what they're doing wrong when it comes to their choice of food and drink. He's a science fiction author, has courted some success, but all is not rosy for him and his books, having just been dropped by his publisher before the final book in his trilogy was submitted for publication. He's understandably a little angry and resentful, but knows this opportunity could be his way forward. Arrogant, he's the first person you'd expect to get murdered if they were doing it based on annoying characters alone. Kenzo is a horror writer. He's had minor success, but competing in a world where king is literally king, it's tough. He has a niche audience, but he knows he has talent. He's incredibly observational. When he first meets Jackson, he is immediately disappointed. He enjoyed the science fiction books this man wrote, but to boost the huge ego further would be a horrifying thing. So he says nothing, instead making yet another coffee to add to the trio he's already enjoyed, and making subtle digs to hide the fact that he's met one of his heroes and been left unimpressed. Kate Newhouse is a debut author, the final arrival on the island. Her first novel hasn't been released yet, but she already has the attention of the best agent in the business. An agent who represents Arthur Fletch. And that's how this author without a book to her name has made the big time. Right place, right time, in a room of her peers. On their first night on this deserted island, the writers talk. One topic of conversation is theories on why they were chosen, the rumours of Arthur Fletch's own ego and a gold book he had created and kept hidden in the very house they're staying in. They also share more about themselves, why they started writing, getting to know each other a little bit more before they go off to find their inspiration, to read the pages that Arthur Fletch wrote before his death. In their room, Malcolm and Sienna have another disagreement. Malcolm is less interested in writing than he is in belittling his soon-to-be ex-wife. He can't understand why she's unhappy with their arrangement. She's the one who decided he would be the face of Penn Stoneley. His laziness, his lack of care about the fact that she is the writer, the one who carefully outlines, the one who does all the work, is at the core of her frustration, and he is unable to see any of this as an issue. Kate is downstairs trying to access the safe where all their electronic devices have been secured. This has all the makings of one of those horror movies. No phones, no connection to the outside world. And then the bodies start to drop. When a note is left in Millie's room, two words typed on a typewriter that none of them have access to, tensions rise, understandably. Is there someone in the house with them? Is it one of the writers themselves? If so, where is this mystery person hiding? Kenzo and Sienna find a working model of the house and discover there is a hidden room in the attic. Arthur Fletcher's room. With a little ingenuity, Sienna discovers the room, tests the typewriter, and learns that this is where the note stating "get out" was typed. But how? The room was locked. Access to the room is hidden and locked. Who else had access? The mystery eats at the people in the house, but nothing is resolved as tensions continue to rise, to the point where Sienna finally tells Malcolm she's going to work on her own. He tells her that she can't take anything from their room, including the typewriter, as it all belongs to Penn Stoneley. So she goes to the hidden room, and as she's walking down the men's staircase, she feels someone shove her from behind. Within moments, she's dead on the hall floor, her head smashed, all her ideas gone. There is a lot going on in the house, on this isolated island, and only a few will get away. But what is the motive driving them? Is it greed? Is it a desire for fame? Or is it revenge? And it's time for the regular Being Bookish public service announcement, which you'll probably be able to say along with me. I am not reviewing this book to influence you one way or the other. Please read what you want to. Pick up any book that sparks joy or takes your fancy. Reading should be fun, not a chore. DNF when you want to, advice I should be taking and I'm very, very bad at. Read what you love, and above everything else, this is not a competition. Whether you read 5 books in a year, 50 in a month, or 500, as long as you enjoy what you've picked up, that truly is all that counts. Anyway, less of that. We've finished the public service announcement. Let's see what others thought about the ending rights itself before I get to my own personal feelings on the book. Amachi really didn't like this book at all, giving it 1 star. They said,
"The ending writes itself straight into disappointment. I picked up The Ending Writes Itself at an op shop for $15, which was incredibly lucky, and I convinced myself it was destiny. I just added it to my TBR days before, so when I spotted it on the shelf, I figured the universe was telling me to grab it right then. I'm genuinely sad I didn't enjoy it as much as I'd hoped. I was lucky to get my hands on an ARC of this book, and I know plenty of people would have killed to have a copy. Pun very much intended. The premise reminded me of The Labyrinth House Murders by Yukito Aitsuji. So I went in expecting that I would absolutely enjoy this one too. Instead, I got unlikable characters with a lot of filler pages. More than half the book focuses almost entirely on just 2 characters, and the rest of the plot gets squeezed in at the last minute. The pace is painfully slow. Nothing major really happens until about 60% of the way through the book. I didn't like how the story ended. I thought it was rushed and way too convenient. Overall, I wanted to love this book, but the heavy focus on a small portion of the cast, the slow build, and the rushed ending left me disappointed. Fun idea, but the execution could have used a little more balance."
Quite often, reading the reviews of the people who were less satisfied with the book can be more interesting than the 5-star views, especially when the book has been so cleverly marketed. I can't help but wonder if a lot of the opinions voiced are in some way related to the expectation raised by the marketing campaign. Again, I have to think about the way people raved about the clever marketing for the mysteriously authored Argyle when I consider this. The book was a mystery, the inspiration for a Matthew Vaughan movie starring Henry Cavill, and it was everywhere. Yet the moment the book was released, it was apparent it was poorly written. The movie was peculiar, and the whole thing is now all but forgotten. Though who can truly forget the awful haircut that Cavill sported while playing the spy? The overall rating for The Ending Rites itself is relatively similar when I look across the various platforms. Given the heightened promotional campaign and the number of people who were incredibly excited about it when it was announced, I was expecting a little more, but I am often surprised when I see expectation versus reality on these things. On Goodreads, it has earned a 3.79 overall rating, and on Storygraph, it's 3.88, which is rather low considering the furore around the book before it came out. Right now, the book has 3,380 ratings and 1,125 full reviews on Goodreads, and on Storygraph, it has 1,176 ratings and 587 reviews. Surprisingly, only 17% of reviewers on Goodreads rated this a 5-star read, with more considering it worth just 4 stars or lower. Kevin rated this book 5 stars when he read it on NetGalley prior to release, proclaiming it a clever novel about the publishing industry as well as a mystery. He said,
"When requesting this book, I did not know about the hype currently surrounding it and the ongoing mystery of who the person, or persons should I say, behind Evelyn Clark really is. All I know is whoever they are, they can write a hell of a thriller. This is packaged as a mystery thriller, but also a satire on the publishing industry, and having read it, I can only be glad I'm a reader and not a writer. That does not sound like a good industry to be competing in. The novel tells the story of the death of Arthur Fletch, famous best-selling author who recently died having left the unfinished manuscript for his last novel. Determining that the book must be finished, 6 authors are invited to Arthur's remote island to compete for the honour of finishing his last novel. As the competition ramps up, so do the bodies, and it's clear that someone would kill to finish off Arthur's last book. First and foremost, this is a brilliant mystery with red herrings, twists and turns galore. Just when you think you have it sussed, it's clear that you don't. But it also seems to be a great satire of the cutthroat nature of the publishing industry, of which I know next to nothing. But it seems like a very difficult industry to thrive in, although I am sure many people love it. All in all, a great novel, and I can't wait until it's released next year to find out who the real Evelyn Clark is."
Clearly, Kevin requested the book on NetGalley prior to the release of Evelyn Clark's Identity, something we'll get to in a short while. Having read the book myself, I can see my own feelings for it being told through both the positive and negative reviews. I know that Goodreads has started to add DNF to their pages, but I was unable to see the number of readers who didn't finish the book on that platform. However, over on Storygraph, 2% of readers marked The Ending Rites itself as a DNF, with the majority of those reviewers including the word boring as a reason, which I find quite interesting. I was told as a child, do not use the word boring to describe anything. My mum read my diary, and that's where that particular feedback comes from. As a teen, everything was boring. Right, now that I've mentioned what others are saying, here's what I really think about The Ending Rites Itself by Evelyn Clark. No spoilers, just 100% honesty. Did I like the book? I love myself a good murder mystery. Agatha Christie is the queen. Discovering that The Ending Rites Itself was going to be the first book that Illumicrate offered with their quarterly Mindsight subscription, I was happy when I got the confirmation my name was off the waiting list. I am, and I will freely admit this, someone who will often pick up a book and buy it because I like the cover, or the sprayed edge, or both. I won't necessarily have any expectations about it, but evidence has shown that I am far more likely to read it quickly if it's really outshining the other books near it on the shelf. I've done it so many times. Yes, that is a shallow way to pick a book, but I'm a mood reader. I'm allowed to do what I want. In fact, any reader's allowed to pick any book they want to, and the reason does not matter at all. Read anything. When my first Mindsight box arrived, I didn't immediately open it, but the temptation was definitely there, and I wasn't disappointed when I gave in and slid the book from its bubble wrap packaging. The design immediately gave the book a very Agatha Christie feel, from the sort of roughness of the dust jacket to the stunning naked hardcover. It gave me confidence that I wasn't going to be disappointed by the story within. I have thought about it quite a lot since I finished it, and I don't really think this book fits the mould when it comes to murder mysteries. The story itself is a blend of horror, satire, and has a sort of cabin in the woods vibe to it rather than the and then there were none it's being marketed to us as. Though the book is relatively short, the edition I have is only 339 pages, and the real story doesn't begin until around 200 pages in, it's a very slow build. Though the opportunity to get to know the characters and start feeling something from them, whether that's disdain, loathing, or love, is more than a little bit wasted. We learn about their surface character, get a little insight into their personal history, such as the muscle-bound science fiction author who changed who he was due to being bullied, or the unhappily married thriller author who has grown to loathe her lazy and entitled husband and co-writer. However, none of this really leads anywhere or has any purpose. Personally, my favourite character was Sienna, one frustrated half of the thriller writer team, Penn Stoneley. Fed up with her husband Malcolm, who loves playing the face of their author but can't be bothered to actually put in any of the hard work associated with it. For some reason, I could understand her exhaustion, the drain her husband and his attitude had on her emotions. I loved seeing a little bit of her writing process because it's something I am personally fascinated with. However, as the first victim of the mystery killer on the island, we didn't get a chance to see anything more. I would have loved if she'd been the one who solved the mystery of who was killing everyone off, and that is how she was built to be in the first few chapters. But it just didn't happen. The early murders, deaths, accidents, as that's exactly what Malcolm's ends up being, but I don't want to spoil things for you, feel as though they were just lucky happenstance for the killer. There is no setup, no exciting revelations, no indication at all that there is something sinister at play. These authors, who were invited to write the ending to a novel to build their careers and earn a 3-book deal, may as well have not been there. In fact, the whole setup just felt pointless. At some point in the book, a secret is revealed, and this could have been the perfect opportunity to reveal a far more sinister motive behind these very different authors being invited to the island. But no, it's a pointless red herring that takes the story nowhere. I really wanted to be surprised, have moments where I experienced a jump scare, or especially at the end, thought, oh, that makes sense, I can see that now. Often when reading a well-crafted mystery, as I get to the end and the murderer and their motive is revealed, I start to see the whole story unravel before me. It's sort of like that moment in Psych or any other crime show where the person who solves the crime isn't a cop and everything plays out as they explain who, why, and what. That didn't happen here. I read the pseudo-confession, witnessed the final murder, and closed the book wondering why I'd bothered. I did not enjoy that feeling. The revelation was not satisfying, the murderer, their motive, everything felt completely out of place, as though it was part of a separate novel. I'm not going to go so far as to say it was boring. The writing was very good, which should be unsurprising given who one of the authors is. The characters could have been so much better, but they had potential. What got me was the lack of care put into the reasons behind everything that happened. It reminds me of that episode of The Big Bang Theory where Amy ruins Raiders of the Lost Ark for Sheldon by telling him that everything would still have happened if Indiana Jones hadn't been a part of it. This book would have had the same outcome if the murders hadn't happened, or they'd been in a different place. The book starts off with incredible promise, from the setup with all the characters arriving on the island, aware of the fact that they are all competing for the same prize with an incredibly short 72-hour deadline, to the rumours of a ruby and diamond-encrusted gold book hidden somewhere in the building. These writers are all at varying stages in their career, writing different genres from thrillers to science fiction, romance and YA, and they all seem to have this drive to succeed. Greed and the promise of a 3-book deal in a competitive world is enough of a motive to kill someone, right? But these characters are somewhat, sadly, insipid. They're all very separate, and the interactions between them give off something of a college gathering feel, from drinking coffee to talking about their accomplishments, their hopes, and their somewhat snide, but not really vicious, barbs to each other. There's nothing really there. We don't get a hint of the horror lingering under the surface of a single one of them. This missed opportunity disappointed me so much. As I thought about the book while writing my initial review, which was far more generously rated than I think it should have been, I will be going back to address that at some point, I realised that I hadn't missed anything when the murderer was revealed. And no, I am not going to reveal who they are. It just wasn't there in the first place. There were a few twists that felt pointless, the sightings across the island at various moments of someone who could be Arthur Fletch, had his death been faked, and the flashbacks to events at the publishing house. These could have been great red herrings had they been written differently, or had they had any connection with what ends up occurring. But they, like a lot of other plot points in the book, went nowhere and meant nothing. Reading the book, I was putting together little things I thought could be clues, perhaps a young author who'd been assaulted by one of the others, or an abandoned child of Arthur Fletch, the author whose death brought them all to the island, out to get everything they could from his estate. There was so much potential, so many possibilities, and yet the ending was a damp squib. I fear my biggest reason for feeling so let down by the ending rights itself has a great deal more to do with the way that it was marketed, the revelation that it was written by two talented authors, and the comparisons to Christie. I have read a few books by one half of the writing team, V. Schwab. I absolutely love and have reread The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue a couple of times. Beautiful prose, incredibly moving story, and the characters were so well crafted. So what went wrong? I'm not familiar with the works of the other half of the team, Kat Clark, though I have seen at least one thing she's written for TV, a minisode of the TV version of Good Omens. Rather famously, at one point in her career, Schwab actually said she would never write as part of a team. But apparently things change. I don't often wish a book were longer. Sometimes I will state I feel it should have been edited a lot better. This book needed a few more chapters, a little bit more exposition, some more backstory, a lot more character building, and the end just felt so wrong to me. A murder mystery needs to be an engaging puzzle with a competent sleuth guiding us through a compelling and well-paced investigation. There need to be credible suspects, logical clues, clever misdirection, and most importantly, at least for me, a satisfying conclusion. As much as I want to say I got all of these things in the ending rights itself, somewhere along the way, the story lost its way. There are credible suspects, we're introduced to all of them at the beginning of the book, but there are no logical clues, there is no clever misdirection, because every single element of the story is a misdirect. We have no sleuth, there is no one leading any investigation, every character is there for the same reason, and the only one who is truly trying to find things out is Sienna, and I've already established, without spoiling anything else, she's a goner. This book is not clever. There are satirical jabs made at the publishing industry, but they are as subtle as a jab to the ribs with a knife. If you want clever, the publishing industry has a lot of issues books, then read Yellowface by Rebecca F. Kwang, though I will admit now that's the only book by her I've actually enjoyed. The murders are disappointing and the ending was pointless. All in all, I feel that the ending rights itself is actually a part of the publishing problem. There are so many incredible authors out there who have written mysteries, cozy and otherwise, that they've self-published because getting into the industry is really hard. Yet here we have a sadly mediocre mystery novel getting massive marketing money spent on it because one of the authors is a very big name in a different genre. All in all, not my favourite mystery, if you couldn't tell, but at least the gold foil proofs now make complete sense. If you enjoyed The Writing Ends Itself or want to read something similar, try these. I have a list a mile long of cozy mystery novels and authors that I love. I've recorded multiple episodes about this particular genre, starting with novels like Agatha Raisin and The Quiche of Death by M.C. Beaton, and moving on to more recent novels, including The Marlowe Murder Clubs by Robert Thorogood and Vera Wong's Unsolicited Advice for Murderers by Jesse Satanto. I'll link my playlist below if you want to listen to any of my older reviews or are just looking for a reading recommendation to get you started in the genre. We're almost in May. Not sure how it happened, but we are. We're a few weeks shy of the halfway mark for 2026, and the year has vanished. The last few months have flashed by as though they were mere moments, and we're headed into what will be my busiest pre-order month of the year. I have 6 pre-orders due for delivery in May, including Fury Bound and Alchemy and A Cup of Tea. I'm not sure if I will be reviewing either for the podcast, but they are definitely going to be books I pick up very soon after they're delivered because I am curious to find out how things end in the Tomes and Tea series and where things continue after that ending for Direbound. That could mean that the last few days of April include some rereads, but currently I am not sure. I have a lot of books on the shelf and I feel that there are some in definite need of a resort. I know I was going to do that. I mentioned I was going to do that over my extended Easter break, but life took a bit of a turn and I ended up needing a mental reboot that I am sadly still struggling through. I have avoided mentioning the mental health aspect of my life for a while, for no other reason than it's been relatively okay as long as I keep on doing what I've been doing. However, recently people have been telling me that I need to set some boundaries. And while I know they're right, it can be tough to change the habits of almost half a century. I know eventually I will figure it out and hopefully the latter part of the year will be a less emotionally draining one. I need to start placing emotional boundaries and say no rather than either saying nothing or just agreeing to things I don't want to do for an easy life. It will cause problems, in fact it already has done, but in the long run I need to be a little bit more selfish because I'm the person who has to live with myself and how I feel about things, and I'm not a very good introspective therapist. Well, that's it for this week, and thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it's only one book review again, but reading has been a little bit light on the ground over the last month. If you're enjoying the show, please share it with your friends or family and leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever platform you listen on. It truly does help reach more listeners, and that's what I'm here for. I want to share my love and opinion of books. Not that you have to take my opinion as the peak with other people. You can find me on Instagram at beingbookishpod, on X at being_bookish, and on TikTok at beingbookishreviews. If you prefer reading, head over to my website beingbookish.co.uk for more spoiler-free reviews, my 2026 reading tracker, and all the links to the podcast on whichever platform it's on in one place. Until next time, this is me saying farewell.